Hello and welcome to the Playground Podcast. I'm Chris Byrne with my co-host and cohort Richard Gottlieb on the keys as per usual. And we have an incredible special edition today. But first, this is the Playground Podcast, and we are brought to you by Global Toy Experts, The Toy Guy, and Beacon Media Group. And when I said special, I mean special because we have two people on here who I've known almost throughout my entire life in the toy industry. And the only reason I haven't known one of them that long is I was in this industry for about 10 or 12 years before she even came into it. We are, of course, talking to Michelle Litsky and Jocelyn Welch from Litsky Public Relations. They have a lot of stories. They can both blackmail me with stories that they've chosen not to. And guys, welcome. This is a monumental time for you because this is all about a business in transition too. Welcome. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having us, Christopher.
Thank you, Chris. It's great to be here.
Okay. So Michelle, why don't you start in on a little bit of history of Litsky PR and the thing you did at the outset that really changed this industry?
When I founded the agency in 1988, nobody was really talking to kids. I saw myself as a niche marketer from prior experience, but nobody in the toy industry was doing what so many other industries were doing successfully. So I not only saw it as an opportunity for me, but it was an opportunity for clients to finally be seen and heard and to be in the spotlight. I was very fortunate to have the late Stephen Hassenfeld as one of my first mentors. And his team at Griffin Bacall really taught me how to market to kids. And that is really where the agency got its foundation 35 years ago.
Holy gee.
And, I know.
And it was quite an interesting time. It was a very different time than it is now. And right now, yeah, you are passing the torch to Jocelyn Welch, who has been with you for a long time. Jocelyn, how did you end up at Litsky PR?
Oh, Chris, that is a terrific question. I joined Michelle 25 years ago as an intern. She was teaching a class at NYU. It was Intro to PR. I took it and I didn't take it seriously. It was a 7-week class. I skipped 2 of the 7 classes. And at one point, she gave us an assignment that our entire grade was going to be based on a presentation that we put together, a campaign. And I had the audacity to tell her that she hadn't taught us enough to even create that campaign. And she said, if I had come to class, I would have had the information. So that began that was the beginning of the push and pull relationship between the two of us that has lasted over 2 decades. And so fast forward, I nailed the presentation and she offered me an internship. And so I started on August 1st of 1998 and I've never left. So I began working out of Michelle's second bedroom with her cat sleeping behind my desktop computer. And she'd call in sick from her bedroom. I would hear her on the other side of the wall. And we've been together ever since. And I'm so grateful for it.
And I'm so grateful that you walked into my classroom with long braids and a schmata on her head with a purple pen. And it was my worst review in the dozen years that I taught at NYU.
Your worst student review?
And here we, I read them. I wasn't supposed to before I dropped them off, but I had to see who wrote. And then I saw the purple pen. And when I asked her to stay after the last class, because she had really blown me away with her presentation skills and her thinking, I said, it's your attitude. I don't know whether to flunk you or to hire you. And she said, hire me, but I'm going to Europe. I'll be back August 1st. And my phone rang on August 1st. She started as an intern, but I can really say that it was not long thereafter that she became more of my right hand and my protege.
So you've moved well beyond a second bedroom, which is a luxury in Manhattan, I'm just saying. You've moved well beyond a second bedroom. You're now in sprawling space in Hoboken, New Jersey. How has the agency grown? And what was your secret for growing the agency?
That's a great question, Chris.
It's a really great question.
Our heart is always going to be in the toy industry. And I think it's where we built so many relationships and developed foundational skills that we've translated to toy adjacent industries, right? Our sweet spot is helping brands talk to kids and families. And so over the years, outside of toy, we've diversified into bicycles, apparel, footwear, publishing, live entertainment. And at the heart of it all is just really building that conversation and awareness with kids and families.
And you can never forget Kosher Meats by Mail.
Kosher Meats by Mail, you're right. I mean, you even know about Kosher Meats by Mail? Oh, no. When I started this agency in 1988, Matchbox Toys was my first client. My joke used to be, if you want to get acquired, hire us, because the toy world kept getting smaller and smaller and smaller, and my clients kept being acquired. But I also knew at the beginning, even though my heart has always been in the toy industry, and I've never really approached any other industry with the same zest and interest, I was selling leather jackets, I was selling Kosher Meats by Mail, and then working on Transformers. So it was really very, very diverse. I had always seen myself as a generalist, and it enabled me to take some really key skills, particularly in the niche marketing area, and bring them into new industries where a lot of people weren't using those same tactics.
And I think that's a great point, Michelle, just about generalists. You know, Chris, you asked how we've continued to evolve and grow. And I think that not only is the toy industry changing, but the PR landscape keeps changing. And so we're working hard to change with it. We expand and evolve our services. We're looking at new platforms, hopping on new trends. And what's keyed, I think, to the agency's success is that each of our employees continues to be a generalist. So they understand how to talk to the New York Times or a TikTok influencer. We understand doing stunts or integrated marketing campaigns. And we really have been dedicated to continual learning and resources to learning and sharing it across the agency.
The other thing, if I may just jump in for a second, is that the conversation's different. Way back in the day, as I refer to it, there was not a lot of places to have a conversation. There were 4 television stations, there was radio station, and there were newspapers and magazines. That in and of itself is a different landscape today. But what was most interesting way back when is the fact that the conversation was one way. We identified who to tell the story to, and we chose the audience. And that's how we delivered the information. Now, I can't even count the number of channels in which the conversations are held, but also consumers and end users now have the ability to talk back and to participate in the conversation. And it has its downside, particularly if you're managing a community.
Well, I think that's a really important point, and really talking about how PR has changed, because consumers really expect it to be a two-way conversation. They expect to be heard, and there's a different discipline now in doing that, in talking to consumers who, as I said, expect to be heard. And I'm seeing that in other industries as well. There's a whole group of people whose job is to respond to social media, for better or worse.
Right. And the consumers are, as never before, talking to one another. And I think it started with mommy bloggers, which feels like it's a lifetime ago, when you give somebody would get an opinion, and then they would ask their friends or ask others within their community to kind of get a consensus. So you really had to be careful, not only with your messaging, but also with how you were delivering your messaging to the end user.
And it seems to me that in some ways you are not in complete control of the messaging anymore. And for certain clients, that may be a challenge in terms of doing things. I mean, when Hasbro, I know this from Hasbro, when they first started doing social media, they needed to approve their tweets like weeks in advance and schedule their tweets. And that's not how this medium works. How have you seen clients evolve to embrace this as well?
Chris, we were part of the team that wrote those tweets for approval. I remember very well just the process. And I think it depends on the company and the size and their comfort with risk and conversation in real time. But you're right. I think companies have to embrace what their authentic voice is. And oftentimes there are a lot of cooks in the kitchen when it comes to communications, right? There's an internal team, there's external agencies, and everyone's really got to get on the same page with a brand voice. And so whether that means that you are entrusting someone to just share your messaging in real time, or as you referenced, you know, planning ahead and getting approvals, I think the key to today's media is to be able to have, to be nimble in the conversations that you're having and really be open about exchanging with your consumer in an authentic way.
And Richard asked a question that could be a corollary to this. What do you see as the biggest change in PR over the course of your careers? We've sort of been touching on that a little bit.
I think it's the biggest change that I've seen in my 25 years is not only the number of channels and platforms for communication, but the speed with which that communication happens. It used to be there would be sort of news cycles wouldn't be 24 hours, you know, and they're even less than that now, right? You know, your story has a very short window and you need to really hop on and maximize, whether that's proactive storytelling or if you're trying to newsjack and sort of hop on a trend or a pop culture conversation. I think you need to really understand the brand that you're working with and be able to jump in the conversation and confidently express your messaging. And so the things that haven't changed, though, I think specifically in PR, is just the ability to create, nurture, and maintain relationships, and also understanding how to tell a great story.
Yeah, and it really does come down to story. And one of the things I always talk about brands is you're not a brand until your consumer tells you that you're a brand. In terms of how they interact with you, because you go through Toy Fair and people say, "Oh, look, this is a brand." You go, "No, that's an item." You know,
yeah.
Maybe it'll be a brand.
I think that's a great point. One of the things, and I think it's really prevalent in the toy industry, is just brand fans, right? That's another way that the landscape has changed. Is we used to do, you know, we've discussed sort of talking at and having those one-way conversations back in the day, as Michelle says, but today you're not just talking to your consumers, but you can also harness the power of fandom, right? And really create brand advocates in a way that is authentic to the brand and that really speaks to your end consumer.
And you really are consolidating your audience. It's not necessarily a general message anymore. It's a targeted message. So when you developed Nerf Nation and you developed all of the stuff around Nerf, you were talking to Nerf fans and they might know nothing about LeapFrog, just pulling that out of my ear. But it didn't matter because they weren't going to buy LeapFrog. They were going to buy more deeply in Nerf. So how has that changed? How do you find those fans?
We had a wonderful opportunity with Nat Geo, National Geographic. We started working with them when they were doing their licensing work. And it grew for us to become their agency of record for their publishing division. And when they came to us, I had publishing experience like back in the flood. So I really didn't feel that it was one of our strengths. And they said to us, "Oh, we can teach you the A's and C's of book publishing. You know how to reach markets. Mm-hmm. You know, if we have scuba divers and book about scuba diving, that you're going to be able to find those fans. You've proven that already and make the books a success." And it's ironically become the bigger division here at the agency.
Yeah, I think just understanding niche communities. And Chris, your question, how do you reach them? I mean, the internet is a wild and wonderful place, right? And so I think, you know, across social platforms, understanding where people are talking about their passions and then inserting yourself into the conversation has been really successful for us and for our clients.
The toy industry, for all that we talk about, you know, Hasbro, Mattel, Lego, LeapFrog, all of those people, they're big companies. But the majority of toy companies are really small companies, and they are if they're not right now, they will confront what you guys have just gone through, which is transition. Transition from one management to the next. And that's a challenge. I consulted to a company that failed at that and ultimately failed. So what would a small company need to know if they're thinking about a transition to keep themselves going?
I can only talk to my secret sauce. You know, I can't really talk to other people. I had the very good fortune 20 years ago of going to a conference about small agencies. And one of the speakers said, if you're 50 and you don't know who's taking over your business, who your professional heir is, you're in trouble. And I was so grateful that Jocelyn and I had already had so much time together and planning the transition, because it really wasn't going to be easy, and we wanted it to be smooth. You know, I'm giving up an email that I've had, the only email I've ever had in my career is going off into the hinterlands. And I think part of it is two people working towards the same goal, and the mom who birthed the baby and who raised a business rather than raising children had the ability to recognize and see some of what I saw myself in Jocelyn. She came to the agency the very first day. She was special. She was different. She had a commitment and a passion. And I think it was up to me to recognize that and to make sure that all around, across the way, she was being challenged and appreciated and respected. And I think that there, we are Michelle and Jocelyn. And I think that that is, you know, we're walking toy fair together because this is who we are and who we have been. And I think it's a wonderful way to have my swan song. Not only I'm retiring, but look what's happening. This incredible human and professional who's been my compass forever is taking my legacy and moving it forward. So I think you can take the emotional piece out of it only so much. You have to really find somebody who feels inside what you feel and have the smarts to recognize it.
Thank you, Michelle.
You're very welcome.
And Chris, I think adding to that on the other side is it's important as the professional heir that you feel empowered to lead and take risks, that you feel trusted, and that you have the space to grow and learn and do things your way, right? I can't tell you how incredible the last 25 years have been just learning from Michelle, one of the industry's icons, one of the best. And now I get to do it. Now it's my turn, right? And so I can take what I've learned from her and what we've built together and continue to make it strong and successful, but in my style.
And you're both very passionate about it. And Richard wanted to know, if you had ended up in a different career path, do you think you would have, are your personalities such that you bring a passion to whatever you do?
Yes, Richard. You know, I never take advantage of the fact that what I have with Michelle is very, very special and very unique, right? I mean, we met and that was it for us. That was the beginning of our 25-year adventure together. I've never written a resume. I've never been in a job interview. As soon as we met, there was this spark. And she recognized that I have the same fire in my belly that she does for the industry, for her business. And I think for our business. And I think for me as a human being, if you're going to do something, you give it your all. Otherwise, it's not worth doing, right? And so I think to answer your question, I think my passion would translate to whatever profession I ended up in, Richard. But how lucky am I that I got to grow up in the toy industry? There's no better place. There's no more fun, wonderful world.
I agree with Jocelyn about the toy industry. And for me, my first experience in toys was incredible. The team that I was with was incredible. Working with Hasbro was incredible. I learned the business of toys from some of the smartest marketers in the business. And then I ultimately went to work for Tom Griffin and Joe Bacall, who were the masterminds in talking to kids.
And just to continue the parenting metaphor, one of the things that I've had the privilege to do observing you guys for all of this time is, Michelle, you're really a free-range parent. You kind of let Jocelyn develop in her own way. And yet at the same time, you've been aligned on purpose and vision.
I learned a long time ago that there are two ways to write a headline. And I think once you really accept that, and you lose some of the ownership when you can see that the direction is the right direction and the strategy is the right strategy. It wasn't hard for me to relinquish, to pass on, and to really share my expertise with Joss, because from day one, she's really earned it and she's been grateful. And I just think we've had a hell of a lot of fun along the way. And we've had dark days along the way, because I don't think you can be a successful business of 35 years without them. It's how you respond to them. Mm-hmm. And in 2015 is when Joss and I really decided that my retirement, though at the time seemed way out there, was somewhat imminent,
right?
You know, that we were going to be true to ourselves and our clients and this industry that we both love, we had to really be true to ourselves. And I think when she was named president in 2018, it gave us 5 years to really, really make a smart transition so that our employees and our clients and our industry friends and our reputation, it's been seamless. And I think that's really what you always want to have, is a seamless transition.
And now that the transition is more or less complete, I know you're never going to go away completely.
Well, you're not going to let me go away.
Nobody's going to let you. But Jocelyn, the toy industry seems to be more dynamic and changing more quickly than at any time in the previous 35 years. How are you setting up to be strategic? Not just tick the boxes and say, oh, we did a social media program. Oh, we did this. Oh, we have an influencer. How are you changing the approach to strategy to reflect the changing industry?
Every client is different, Chris. Everyone has different objectives. And so that's where we begin, right? We sit down and we understand what is important to your business. What business goals do you want to reach? And from there, we conduct research, we develop insights, and then we form our strategy. And we take into consideration success, because that looks different for every company, whether you are big or small, privately held or publicly owned. And so no matter how the industry or PR and marketing change, I think that stays the same is a bespoke approach to every client or brand, right? And I think that's how the agency has remained successful and growing, because we continue to evolve and we bring in things like, you know, when social came up, we jumped into social. When influencer marketing started, we really have honed our skills there. We are now doing affiliate PR. And so I think we are able to keep our clients current because we continue to evolve as an agency.
We have lots of stories of Toy Fair in years gone past. Do you have a favorite one of Toy Fair?
Wow.
I know, there's so many, right? I mean, you ran Mr. Potato Head for mayor of Boise, Idaho. You've done all kinds of crazy stuff.
He came in fourth out of six. But I think that was really what some of the magic was. You know, Mr. Potato Head was having a whole new look and a new attitude and a new body. And the mayoral race in Boise, the incumbent of 20 years, was no longer running. And so what better place to take a man of the soil back to his roots. And so it wasn't Portland, it had to be Boise, because recognizing that the way to do it was to align with one of the fraternities on campus. I was going through things yesterday and I found a t-shirt I bought never wore in 1984 that had two potatoes with Varney sunglasses on in the front. And in the back, it was the two potatoes at Boise State University. So it was connecting the dots. So Potato Head was one of them. And then the other thing I'm still in amazement by was the launch of Transformers. Because I think that from a marketing to kids standpoint, it really was one of the gold stars. It was one of those initiatives that gets bigger and better. I was there when Steven Spielberg came to Hasbro to have breakfast with Steven Hassenfeld and to talk about Transformers coming to the big screen, which was Steven's vision. And it was how many years later, 30 years later, that Brian Goldner, another visionary, they bookended my career, he brought it to the big screen, and Jocelyn had the opportunity to be part of that whole marketing initiative. So things change, people change, we grow, and I think we have a lot of things we're proud of and to show for it.
So Richard has a somewhat waggish question. Is Potato Head his last name, or is Potato his first name and Head his last, like Edith Head?
I think that's a wonderful question. you know, he thought of himself as America's spokesbud, and I think he really, really made his mark when he threw away his pipe in the office of the general, I think it was Surgeon General Coop at the time. And I think part of what it is keeping him relevant. Right. Making sure that whatever's going on in the world, there's a place for him. He came with me to Venice with his wife. He traveled the world, you know. So it's recognizing those nuggets and keeping them in pop culture, depending what the culture is. So I think he's as relevant today as he has been. And I think he's gone through lots of different changes. As have we all.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it really is being part of the conversation. And Richard was also curious about it. And I'd like to hear this too, is your take on the Barbie movies and what you think its success will mean for Mattel and the industry.
I haven't seen the movie.
What?
No.
Twice.
I understand. It was a hard decision for me because I was your first Barbie audience. So for me, I've watched her change, and my thoughts about her have changed as I first became an aunt and then became a grandparent. But what I can talk to is the sheer brilliance of the initiative behind it. The fact that it took 6 years for all of those partnerships and for everybody to have ample time so that when everything hit on July 21st, most of pop culture was participating in the pink phenomenon. So the movie I will see, and I think I will enjoy it. I've heard many wonderful things about it, but I was in awe of the marketing effort behind it.
Yeah, it was pretty big, and it wasn't just toys. I mean, this is a movie for you. It really is a movie for you. So I kind of described it as the quintessential American fashion doll meets Ibsen's A Doll's House.
I love that analogy.
Oh my gosh. Our last question is for both of you. It's the question we're asking every guest on season 5 of the Playground podcast. Who is the person or people who have had the most influence on your career in the toy industry? Joss, we'll start with you. And we're just going to assume Michelle. So as one of them.
Yes.
Who else following has influenced Michelle. You?
Yeah. Following Michelle, you know, I spent the better part of my career working on the Hasbro business, right? When I joined as an intern, I was working on Cap Candy and it was acquired, and then Odds On and that was acquired. And so Hasbro sort of was gobbling up the brands I started on. And then I really spent most of my time at the agency building that business. And I learned so much. And there are so many people that were part of that journey. I think it was an incredible opportunity to be working on the Hasbro business under Brian Goldner's watch. He was such a visionary, and the way that he transformed that company from a toy and game company to just an entertainment powerhouse, and to watch his brand blueprint come to life, was really impressive. And I was fortunate enough to work beside Julie Duffy, and she really taught me true partnership. The two of us worked together for multiple decades. Not that I want to age us, Julie, sorry, but I just feel like throughout my career, I've worked with a lot of people, and Julie is one of those people that she'll be friends for life. And we have really accomplished some impressive things together. And so I'm grateful for that.
Okay, Michelle, you're up.
I've mentioned Steven Hassenfeld and his brilliant team, and Joe Bacall and Tom Griffin. I think the two people have really been by my side as confidants and as trusted advisors. My first being Neil Friedman, who I met way back in the Hasbro days when he was first just coming over to be the president of Aviva Hasbro. We're still friends. I remember when he retired, Richard actually said to him, "You know, you need a publicist. Have you thought about Michelle Lipsky?" And I was so honored because he didn't know that we were already besties and that I would have been highly offended had he asked anybody else. And then more recently, I can say, and the person who's really helped guide me through this transition is John Barber, for whom I have the utmost respect, for who came to Matchbox Toys from Scotland, who didn't make eye contact, who looked down, could barely understand him. And in me helping him acclimate, he just really helped me recognize what it was going to take to continue to build the agency and to bring along my protege.
This isn't an ending. It's really the beginning of a new chapter for both of you. And I think that's so exciting. And Michelle and Jocelyn, you've had such an impact on the toy industry and inspired so many people yourselves that we're so excited to see what's next for both of you. So thank you so much for spending the time with us today.
It's been our pleasure. Thank you.
This is the Playground Podcast with me, Chris Byrne, my co-host and cohort, Richard Gottlieb, on the keys. We are brought to you by Global Toy Experts, The Toy Guy, and Beacon Media Group. We will see you next time.